KBOO Community Radio is proud to present A Hard Day's Night as part of the KBOO at the Clinton Monthly Film Series. The Beatles made this film in 1964 as they portray a rock and roll band traveling from Liverpool to London for a television broadcast, and wackiness ensues. Again, that's A Hard Day's Night, Thursday, October 8th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to present an evening of music and dialogue on the climate and jobs crisis Saturday, October 10th at 6:30 p.m. Joe Uline is a labor leader who will discuss the urgency and the climate crisis and the response that must be made in carbon neutral work, education, and more. Again, that's an evening of music and dialogue on the climate and job crisis Saturday, October 10th, 6:30 p.m. at the AFL-CIO Hall at 3645 Southeast 32nd Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Music playing is Interstellar Dub by DJ Mad from Portland label Zam Zam Sounds. I'm Andre Middleton, and this is Art Focus on KBOO Radio. I'll be hosting Art Focus on Tuesday mornings from 11:30 to noon on a bi-weekly basis, alternating with the esteemed Joseph Galavan. Thank you for joining us. Normally, I share some art-related news, but today the entire program will be a conversation. Listeners, please write down the number for our studio line. It's 503-231-8187. If we have time at the end of the interview, we'll open up the lines for your questions, so get them ready. Today, I am thrilled to talk with Klamath Modoc artist Natalie Marie Ball. Natalie was born and raised in Portland, Oregon. She has a bachelor's degree in ethnic studies from the University of Oregon, and she furthered her education in New Zealand at Massey University, where she attained her master's degree in Maori visual arts. She now resides in her ancestral homelands and former reservation with her partner and three children. Natalie is an indigenous artist who examines the internal and external discourses that shape Indian identity with contemporary installation art. She believes historical discourses of Native Americans have constructed a limited and inconsistent visual archive that currently misrepresents their past experiences and misforms our current expectations. She excavates hidden histories and dominant narratives to artistically deconstruct them through a theoretical framework of autoethnography, to move Indian outside of governing discourses in order to rebuild a new visual genealogy in refusal to line up with the many constructed existences of Native Americans. Because autoethnography refers to the self, her location as a descendant of African slaves, English soldiers, and the great-great-granddaughter of Kindpus, also known as Captain Jack, who led Modoc resistance during the Modoc War of 1872, informs her work. Within the thematic focus of her work, and because of her descendancy, it is here where her artistic approach and interest lies. With degrees in ethnic studies and indigenous visual arts, her work is always in discussion with racial narratives, critical to understanding both the self, the nation, and necessarily our shared experiences and histories. Her art is not limited to textually. It goes beyond the language of memory to allow for witnessing that does not diminish the past or the present. KBOO listeners, it is my immense pleasure to present Miss Natalie Ball. Hey, Natalie, how are you doing?
Hi, Andre. How are you?
Oh, much love, girl. Much love. It's been great getting to know you this past few months, and I can't tell you how long I've been looking forward to anticipating this conversation.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine. My ears are always open for you. Always, always, always. So let me start. We're going to dive right in because there's a lot we want to go through. So let me start with your artistic journey. For many Native Indigenous cultures, art, culture, creativity are part of life on the regular. You know what I mean? Right. Whether it's clothes, food, yet living in a Western world, the need to conform to a capitalist paradigm seems to always want to commodify and thus control that creative instinct. When do you recall your need / desire to be an artist, and how has the creative facets of your life and culture be a part of your daily life in what were some of its earliest manifestations?
I think art has always been a part of, I guess, just my history and my growing up, really. It's nothing that was formal. It's just something that was always done, whether it be culturally, ceremonially, and things like that. But also, I really liked to produce and make art as a kid. But I didn't really get into art on a like professional level or a serious level, I guess, until I entered into academia, until I went to the U of O. Single mom, had a two-year-old, full ride scholarship, and I was like, man, I'm not spending my money on this degree. What do I really want to do? And then I chose art. And I also chose, well, art was my other degree that I attained, but also ethnic studies was the other one.
Right.
And the ethnic studies gave me the language to be able to speak about my art and speak about what I was talking about, pretty much. And it kind of drove me towards autoethnography, which is a huge deal for me, and it was really empowering. So that's what that started at. Art's always a part of like what I'm doing, my home. I like to decorate my home. I like to dress my kids up. I like tattoos. I like makeup. It's just always something that I'm delving into, I guess.
So when you mentioned the tattoos, makeup, art, clothing, my immediate image was, how were you presenting yourself in aligned with your self-perception of your identity? Has art had an impact on that process for you?
Yes. I think visually us as Indigenous people of color, our existence is resistance. Our existence is about survival. And physically, what we look like, too, has aided me. Like my tattoos is always about resistance too, and it's about celebration of who I am. Being a mother, having kids is about resistance. It's about celebrating who I am. It's about celebrating my ancestors as well. It's just always a part of, it's just an everyday thing, I guess.
Right. So I see when you talk about your art, that I see that you continued your studies in New Zealand. What drew you to that locale and cultural environment?
Man, that was like one of the craziest things I think I've ever done in my life so far. At least one of them. I just graduated from the U of O. I was single mom still. Had my daughter was about 6 at that time. And I knew I wanted to go into get my graduate degree, but I just wasn't finding what I needed. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I think New Zealand was leading in like the discourses for decolonization as far as like indigeneity and what that meant. And so I was really interested in having that kind of dialogue from the institutions and the Native people who were leading it, I think, worldwide. And also because, like, in relation to their, like, history of colonization and to my tribal history of colonization, like, we were colonized around the same time.
Right.
But they bounced back faster, if I can say. They started to recover and to resist and to do really cool things artistically on the art level too, sooner. So I think that it was kind of like going into the future as far as what I wanted to experience as an Indigenous mom, I'm pretty much an artist.
Right.
It was like a look into the future, and so I just did it. I took out some loans and I got on a plane with my daughter and I just made it happen. It was one of the best things I've ever done.
I can imagine that art and culture could have been at the center of the of their reemergence in New Zealand because, hey, let's be realistic, they're on an island. They're not in the middle of America. They're not in the middle of California. They're not in the middle of a culture that exports, you know, every song, movie, poem that they yeah. can that they can spew from their collective consciousness. I can imagine having that, I don't want to say isolation, ghettoization, I don't want to go there, but I can see how having such control over themselves and being in such close proximity to other similar cultures was probably a big part of that reemergence.
Exactly. And you know what? It's played a huge part in how I'm coming back here, coming back home, and figuring out what that now means for me, because their indigeneity is different from mine. There's a lot of, like, intersections that I'm dealing with that's not there as well. But it was a huge sounding board for me to figure out where I wanted to go and to be able to say no to things, to say, like, no, this is not okay, this is not appropriate, to have, like, a stronger voice, I guess.
Right.
They are very isolated over there, but at the same time, America has hit that place as well. Like, McDonald's is definitely there. Music is definitely there. But it is far. And actually, the North Island for New Zealand is as big as Oregon.
Oh, wow.
So it is small. Like, you can get around that place pretty fast.
Gotcha. So where do you call home? And how does living there, in contrast with living up here, have an impact on your work? You know, whether it's audience development, access to resources, materials. What about access to collaborators?
Yes, like being where I'm living at now, which is my ancestral homeland, is like being on residency for a long time. I think I'm like doing, it's like my fourth year here, I think. I just, how that happened was I wanted to have more kids and to build a family. And so this seemed like the best place to do it. Portland was getting expensive at the time.
Still is.
Fourth day. Yeah, like I can't imagine now living there. And then I'm able to work for my tribe, and it's a really cool place to raise your kids and connect them with who they are. So I chose going back to Chilicon, Oregon, which is about 5 hours from Portland, going south.
Uh-huh.
So this is home for me right now. But I've been on the go. I mean, Portland has been my home for 20-plus years. I was born and raised there. That will always be my home, too. But right now, Chilicon is my home. And as far as for audience building, I like it because I'm able to choose my level of engagement and to engage with things when I want to,
uh-huh.
I guess. But it is, I'm at a point, a crossroads right now where it probably will be changing as far as like how I'm developing as an artist. So that's coming in like the next year. Right now I'm pretty okay with where I'm at. It's a cool place to be able to think about art, think about self, and to do art. Like I can, right now if I say, hey, I want to go make some art by a waterfall, like I can do that. Like
right.
It's in my backyard. It's pretty cool. Like it's pretty awesome. But and as far as like resources, it's been a huge place where where I'm getting a lot of my wood from,
mm-hmm.
Inspiration, and just materials, you know, because we have hunting and gathering rights here. We're able to go out and do our thing, and I'm able to explore that, too, with, like, different kind of, like, traditional materials, plant materials, things like that.
Nice. Speaking of travels, obviously it sounds like your work has got you traveling to quite a few places. How has living so intersectionally impacted your work? I mean, I, for one, would love to hear the secret of maintaining such a firm grip on your identity and your story while having other people see and respond to you to what their perspectives, you know, the facets that they can see. You know what I mean?
Say that one more time.
Well, how can I put this? Like you, I am a multicultural person, and therefore I've got multiple facets of myself that I can acknowledge on the regular because I see myself every day. But as I travel around, people see what they want to see. You know, they want to see my education on one level. They want to see my race on another level. They want to see my masculinity on one level. So I'm saying, how have you, through your art, kept a tight grip on your personal identity, even though other people see you as they want to see you, differently on a daily basis?
it's hard. Like, as an artist, it's hard. Like, you get these expectations put on you.
Don't go away, folks. It's okay. Don't go away, folks. We're going to be right back. Having a little technical difficulty, but we're going to get her back. And I think we just have. Hold on just a moment. We've got just a few minutes to talk with Natalie Ball. She has been an amazing artist. While I've got a couple of seconds here, let me do a little art news for you. Remember that there are some grant deadlines coming up in the month of October that I want to make sure you guys are hip to. Clackamas County Arts Alliance has a grant deadline on October 9th. That's just the end of this week. Multnomah County Cultural Coalition has a grant deadline of October 19th. And the Creative Spirits located in Westland Lutheran Church. So, Natalie, welcome back.
Thank you. I thought you were done.
No, I'm not done yet. So you were talking about the challenge of maintaining your identity and, you know, in the face of how the people perceive you.
Heck yeah. It's that's what I'm kind of dealing with right now. It's hard. Like, there's a lot of expectations on me to be a certain way producing work as a Native American artist. They want me to look a certain way, or they have these expectations on what my art should be, what it should sound like, look like. And sometimes there's a lot of alienation that happens, too. It's like either I'm co-opting with somebody because I'm talking about what is in to talk about, I guess, as far as, like, what's happening in the Native, like, art world. But I've never let that affect me. I guess I've never been the one to talk about what's safe to talk about,
right,
or what's expected to talk about, or how even I look. Like, you know, I'm loving who I am, and I'm loving where I'm coming from, and I'm just excited to reach different audiences as well, because sometimes in the Native art world, it's really small.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited to kind of branch out and to see what else is out there, and just to keep doing me.
It's interesting. I'm a member of a collective called BCC Brown Hall, and we've had the discussion of, you know, what is black art? And as, you know, black art has grown, evolved, expanded, we're starting to identify and classify it, or I guess claim it for our own, despite what's been done in the past, you know?
Yes.
You know, and it's interesting to want to preserve a legacy and preserve a conversation, yet how do we expand that conversation without detaching from what's been done in the past?
Yeah, I think when you're getting into, like, Native American identity, man, it's pretty strict. There's a lot of layers. There's a lot of history behind it. I mean, even just having to, in order to be, like, recognized as a Native American federally, you have to meet a certain blood quantum.
Right.
You know, and it's just, there's a lot of restrictions on how you can identify. And I think that a lot of them aren't healthy.
Right. Right.
So I think that, and that kind of delves into or goes into how, into the, to the art world as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how can it not?
Right.
Yeah, I'm just really interested in having dialogue outside of, like, the expectations of what Indian art is or Indian identity is, and it's happening,
mm-hmm.
but I think it needs to happen more and be more visible.
So
I think we need to start challenging a lot more stuff.
You're absolutely right. So I want to start talking about your art. We've been talking about you for quite some time. Let's get down into it. So even though this is radio, folks, you can't see what I'm looking at, but I've got two photographs of some of her more recent work, and I want to make sure that you all can see it. So please go visit kbu.fm and go to the Art Focus show page. I've got two of her works on there, in addition to a picture of Natalie Ball herself. In addition to, if you go to our Facebook page, KBU Art Focus on Facebook, you can also see a small sample of her work. But I've got two pieces here that are just astounding. I've got, let me make sure I'm reading this right. Let's see. I've got Mapping Coyote Black, and then To Be Continued. Now, granted, To Be Continued is a much larger, I mean, there's a lot more variety of pictures I could look at. But Natalie, could you describe, because I want to make sure you do it justice, because I know I wouldn't. Can you describe Coyote Black and some of the thoughts you had behind it?
Yeah. Oh, that was my baby, Mapping Coyote Black. I did that early 2015. It's an installation. It's just dealing with, so I kind of enlist Coyote, because Coyote's famous. We all know Coyote, right?
Yeah.
Coyote's smart, powerful, plays jokes. play is a trickster. So I offer Coyote through mapping Coyote Black as a woman, as avatar of myself. I'm shameless. I'm hungry. I'm independent. I'm able to switch forms. So this installation is kind of dealing with the intersections of Black and Indian and my personal experiences growing up in Portland,
mm-hmm.
As well as kind of going back in time. So I'm playing with time interchangeably, like political fantasy, with fluid concepts of time. So I'm talking about historical narratives. I'm talking about personal narratives and family narratives here, and claiming the intersections of Black and Indian and claiming my, you know, who I am at the same time. So there's actually coyote heads. There's three coyote heads that are wearing powwow crowns, beaded powwow crowns. There's old newspapers, actual newspapers that were covering the Modoc War at the time, like New York Times, and even in London, there's newspapers from London. But the showstoppers for this one are the two quilts, the two deconstructed quilts that I have on there. Mm-hmm. They're carrying a lot of narrative in those. And there's also a lot of coyote teeth, which is awesome.
Nice. And the other photo, if you guys go visit our website, you can see, is To Be Continued. Now, I recognize the young lady in the picture. I don't know if you want to give her a shout out, but can you tell us about To Be Continued and what's being continued?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for wanting to talk about this. That's my daughter, Lokwani Tani. She's my oldest. She's 16 now, and it's just, this is like an honest personal reflection on claiming like visual sovereignty is like claiming who we look like, how we look like, and how that is indigenous. How that is Native. The big, you know, it's not the typical Edward Curtis looks, you know? It's not how we're expected or made to look. It's just who and what we are. But it's also about my relationship with my daughter in relation to our history of genocide, disenfranchisement of our people. So I'm choosing these things in the images to kind of communicate that with the viewer. And that the Indian Wars are not over as well, because we're still dealing with it as women. And it's just me about teaching my daughter that the Indian Wars are not over, and that these are the things that she's going to have to deal with, even though, you know, we're not being gunned down anymore. We're dealing with legislation.
Excuse me?
No. What did you say?
Did you say we're not getting gunned down anymore?
No, we're not. She's not, and I'm not.
All right.
Getting gunned down, like, on our res anymore. Like, I'm talking about the Modoc War. I mean, it is happening.
Okay.
I thought I said something wrong. No. Like, it's happening. I know what's happening. But what I'm saying in relation to our history as being Modoc people, like, I mean, it can happen. It will happen. But I'm just saying that we're not being gunned down like we were during the time of the Modoc War.
I understand. My bad.
Okay. I thought I was in school here. So.
I know. No, I was going to push back a little bit because, I mean, next to Black people, I mean, I'm sorry, Native Indigenous Americans are being harassed and killed and, you know, oppressed every day on the regular. And while it might not make the evening news, you know, I've got a lot of love and allegiance with people, you know, my people of color all over the country. So I just wanted to make sure that people knew where I was coming from.
No, that's a definite narrative that I have in Mapping Coyote Black, but, this narrative that I'm talking about is that the Indian Wars are not over.
Right.
And then we're pulling in, like, the water rights, land acquisition, dam removal, salmon restoration, self-determination, and blood quantum. Those are the kind of things that we're fighting. And, you know, we are fighting being gunned down and stuff, but that's not what I'm talking about in here.
Gotcha. I understand. I've noticed, looking through a lot of work, the quilt. The patchwork,
right.
The assemblage of scraps, intention with stories, and could we talk a little bit about the intersection of love for family, love for your people, and love for your culture? You know, I think there are parallels between your work and the work that I've seen other places, especially your Aunt Peggy, if you don't mind me saying, how
yeah.
much of her work, her quilts, her portraits, her family, maybe express this love. What are some of the parallels that you can see threading through your work as you've been doing it in comparison with artists who preceded you?
So do you want me to pull in, like, my Aunt Peggy and how her work is, like, pretty much inspires my work?
If you're down for that, I'd love to. I was really moved by
yeah.
it.
Yeah. No, like, yeah, I would love to talk about my Aunt Peggy. She's a beautiful, she just passed away, and she's a, was huge in how I'm approaching my art and what I'm, how I feel about art and how art is healing. So she started me out as like a teenager, quilting. She pieced together quilts forever. She was, her favorite friend was, best friend was Eileen Jasper, and she's through, and she taught Peggy how to quilt. The traditional way, and so Peggy taught me, but I wanted to deconstruct it. I wanted to learn how to take it apart, reassemble it, and how to not make it so exact and precise.
Mm-hmm.
So that was part of it, but also my Aunt Peggy's work, what she was doing, her life was a lot of trauma happening, and she chose to heal from her traumas through her art, and she did it her whole life. And she's just about being better and getting better.
Nice. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome.
No, I appreciate that. So, speaking of deconstruction, communication across distance, communication across cultures. Who are you talking to? Who's listening?
I don't know who's listening yet. Like, whose ear do I have, or who's my viewer, or who's my audience?
Yeah, I mean, and I say that because I want to do this as a segue to your event that you're doing in late October. But it occurred to me as I thought about that event of how have cultures communicate across distances? How have they been able to connect despite not utilizing the latest and the greatest technology? And that made me think of those messages are specific, even though to the untrained ear, it may seem incoherent. So I'm thinking, who are you talking to?
I'm talking to anyone who wants to come and war hoop at the Portland Art Museum. And specifically, I'm talking to anybody who wants to have a dialogue about race, anybody who wants to have a dialogue about art and me and my history. And I don't think my audience is really limited.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just excited to see how I can grow my audience as well. I'm very inclusive in my work. It's a safe space to be and to have those kind of dialogues. But as far as, like, the war hoop, man, anybody can come. So, it's open to anybody who has a voice.
So can you give our listeners a little background about, you know, some of the details and maybe a little bit about its genesis?
Yes. So I was pulled in from Fallen Fruit and Caldera Arts. Fallen Fruit, David Allen Burns and Austin Young. They're out of L.A., and they have this project where they have collaborated with a handful. There's actually a lot of artists on October 24th who will be performing art throughout Portland. But Fallen Fruit will be at the Portland Art Museum, and they have an installation there, and then they invited me that day as well. So I'll be doing the War Hoop flash mob. I just figured what was my response to about memory, being Indigenous or being Black and Native, and what that could mean for this space. I didn't want to produce art that just was on a wall. I wanted to do a piece that was time-based. It was short, but it was loud. And so this is my response in that space. I think that Fallen Fruit came to me a couple months ago and asked me to be involved, and they wanted my take on, like, the Oregon Trail and that kind of migration. And so this is my response, that we're still here. It's a celebration of resistance. It's about art. It's about life and claiming space, most importantly.
Nice. We're getting a little low on time, but there's a question I always like to ask. What is the question that your art is seeking to answer?
What is the question that my art is seeking to answer?
Yeah.
I don't think I have a question that I want to answer just yet.
Okay.
It's about making mistakes. It's about it's exploring. It's about having a voice. I don't know if I have just one question for that.
That's fair. That's fair. No, that's great. That's great. Great. Natalie, once again, what's going on at the Portland Art Museum on October 24th?
October 24th, we're having the War Hoop Flash Mob at 2 o'clock. We're handing out bandanas, silkscreen bandanas, and we'll be War Hooping at 2 o'clock. It's open to any and everybody.
Where can people find more information about you, your work, and this event?
They can go to my Facebook event page, Natalie Ball's War Hoop Flash Mob. They can Instagram Natalie_Ball. They can email me, Natalie_Ball@ymail.com, or go to my website at www.nataliemball.com.
Natalie, I will be seeing you on October 24th, and thank you so much for joining us today here at Art Focus.
Thank you, Andre. I appreciate it.
Anytime.
Okay, bye.
Well, folks, once again, we had an amazing show, and I want to thank you all for joining us. You know, we're going to remind you that my goal here is to introduce listeners of KBOO to a broad spectrum of regional artists. If you're a visual artist in any medium, I'd love to have you or your organization here right here on the show. It's also my goal to share information relevant to artists as well. When I learn of residencies, grant deadlines, or call for artists, you'll hear about it on this show, as well as our Facebook page and KBOO Art Focus. We're going out to the music from Danny Skrilla from Portland's own Zam Zam Sounds. Thank you again for joining us on Art Focus here on KBOO Radio, Portland, Oregon.